How did you happen to get in here?
I ran here. You scared the daylights out of me last night.
Seems like the truth shouldn't scare anybody, man or boy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dragon King Dark. I'm your host, Carl Stern. This is episode 22 of Dragon King Dark. Thanks a lot for listening. I hope you take the time, if you've missed any of our previous shows here at AfterDarkRadioShow.com, to go back into the archives and check them out. Our shows have covered a broad range of topics that are different and unique from what Brian Alvarez does over at After Dark. So you can get your feel of that type of stuff, and then you can come over here for a little something extra, a little something different. I cover a really eclectic topics. Our last show was a conspiracy theory-themed episode on the news, and I've gotten a lot of great feedback on it. And coming up soon, we will do an email show where I talk to, I go into the email bag and give your thoughts and stuff. And if you'd like to contribute to that, please do so. My email address is carl@dragonkingcarl.com. That is Carl with the letter K, K-A-R-L at dragonkingcarl.com. Of course, if you take that to mean I have my own website as well, that is right. I do. It is dragonkingcarl.com, and I do encourage you to check that out and see what I have to offer over there. And today's show is going to take a look at a... I don't want you to get the wrong impression that this is specifically what this show is about. It's more like a lot of our shows. It's the generalized theme of, we're going to talk today about Frankenstein. And I don't want you to take that just to mean the Frankenstein monster, the book by that came out, really is one of the earliest of the monster books by Mary Shelley back in the early 1800s. Nor do I mean you to take it to be just the movie, the famous Universal Monster movie of Frankenstein was really one of the early monster movies as we came to know them. The Frankenstein monster character portrayed by, most famously, I would say, by Boris Karloff. The Frankenstein is really the idea of, and I find this really fascinating. We've talked about this too in some of our shows. If you go back and let's see, what episode was that? Go back in our archives and listen to episode 13. That was on 1950s comic book series. It touched on a lot of these same ideas as well. That back in the 1700s and the 1800s, perhaps as late as even into the 1900s, there was this idea of this fascination with what is the delineation between life and death. At what point is something dead versus alive? What is the instant that takes place? What has really happened? And is it something spiritual? Did a soul depart the body? If so, quantify this soul. Where does it reside? What does it look like? Can you measure it? Can you weigh it? Can you observe it? Is it the cessation of electrical activity in the brain? Well, we've seen instances where that can restart And the heart's still beating, and the lungs are still breathing. Is it the moment the heart stops? Well, there's still electrical activity in the brain. We've seen stories of people being brought back. There's one story I was reading recently of a case where a girl had drowned in cold water, fallen into cold water, and had been submerged for 66 minutes. And she was brought up after 66 minutes of being underwater. Her body was warmed up, her blood was warmed up, and she came back to life and is still alive to this day. So what is that switch that flips? Back in the 1700s, 1800s, scientists were very interested in this. They were trying to figure out because, I mean, the Victorian era, you had this clashing between church and science. Science was rising, especially science of the body. They were exhuming, stealing dead bodies to cadavers to experiment on, to learn from, to cut open. And many things we've learned about the human body were done from these illegal, dark experiments, these very macabre undertakings from these scientists and doctors. They were paying people to steal bodies from cemeteries. The term ghoul was derived from these people that would go out and dig up these freshly deceased bodies for scientists and doctors to dissect and to learn from. And there was this whole idea of, can we bring a dead body back to life? What is the thing that has left the body that no longer brings animation to it? Somewhere along the way, with all of our medical advancement, all of our everything we've learned, that is still the thing we haven't learned. And we aren't really looking for it anymore. We're learning how to, and making huge strides into extending people's lives. As many of you know, some of you perhaps don't know, I myself, in the last couple years, battled stage 3 cancer. I hope I am cured now. The surgery I underwent, the radiation, the chemotherapy, doctors are seem very confident that all of it has been removed. Hopefully, it will not come back. Hopefully, there aren't, you know, cancer cells at work in my body unbeknownst to me even at this moment. But they've made huge strides in fixing that sort of stuff. The heart, we can transplant hearts now. We can transplant a lot of things and extend people's lives. There's lots being done in the field, in various fields, to just extend the natural lifespan of people. But we still do not know the thing that makes you alive, consciousness. A soul, whatever terminology, whatever label you want to put on it. Even in very scientific terms, if you're someone who has a bend towards science like I do, an interest in it, you can, with lots of words and lots of charts and lots of graphic shows, show brain activity, higher brain function, lower brain function, you know, the beating of the heart, the breathing of the lungs, the flow of the blood. And you could stop any one of those activities and still technically be alive. You could even stop all those activities for a period of time, and we've seen people come back. But it seems like there is a moment. I've witnessed this myself over 22 years of the job I do outside of this. I've had, unfortunately, in the role of first responder, I have had, unfortunately, many, many instances where I have been there at the moment life ends, that moment. And I can tell you, as a person who has stood there and saw it myself many times over the course of 22 years at this point, that moment when it's over. It's unsettling. It's it's a feeling unlike any feeling. It's just a knowledge. I can't point to the thing that happened. I've saw people stop breathing, and through CPR, through ambulance personnel working on them, through them being hospitalized, they start breathing again. I've seen people's hearts stop beating, and through CPR or shock, the heart starts beating again. I've saw people with stop seemingly all functions and find out later after they were flown to the hospital or a stay in the hospital that these people are about to be released. And then I've stood there and I've saw it end. And I've thought to myself, one second ago, this person was a person, alive. Thoughts, dreams, ambitions, ideas, love, emotion, intellect. And now, that second, it's gone. And you want to grab it. You want to say, where is it? Can we put it back? Can that thing, I can't point to that thing that is there and say, give that thing medicine, give that thing electrical shock, give that thing something and make it start again, because it's gone. And we don't even know what that thing is. Well, back in the Victorian era, that was a question that was receiving a lot of attention. And the Frankenstein or the modern Prometheus is I like that subtitle, the modern Prometheus. That was a question they were interested in. Of course, most of you know the general idea. Most of you know the story from the Frankenstein movie. It does differ significantly from Mary Shelley's novel. Mary Shelley's novel is one of is a tremendous work of literature. It's not one of my favorite of the horror or that type of novel. I'm much more a fan of I think Dracula is again, I know what it is. It's that Victorian era language. It makes it more difficult to read. To me, I'm not a fan of that era of writing. Even some of the classics, like A Tale of Two Cities, I find that book just exhausting to get through. And it's one of the more, legendary classic books of all of literature. And to me, it's just a work in exhaustion to get through that book. That whole Victorian era writing just doesn't. Matter of personal taste. Don't enjoy stuff like that, and it's Frankenstein to me. But the novel has been done relatively faithfully, adapted in certain movies. But the one you're probably most familiar with, the one with Boris Karloff, is not so much so. But you know the general story. The general story is Frankenstein is not the monster. Frankenstein is the scientist. Frankenstein, Victor Frankenstein. Goes out and he is searching for this answer, the way to bring life back to the dead. He has, of course, his people robbing graves. Aware of Igor, the assistant in some adaptations and movies and stuff, going out grave robbing, bringing in fresh bodies through which he is cobbling them together into one human being. Of course, as we now know from modern medicine, this would bring about a multitude of problems in and of itself with organ rejection and blood type and stuff like this. Back then, that all that stuff hadn't yet been learned, so you have to suspend your disbelief and just accept that, okay, all this stuff cobbled together is going to work, even though it wouldn't. These multiple body part transplants and so forth, and the brain, of course, of the criminal implanted in there, and the insanity of the amount of neurons, electrons, nerve endings and stuff that's going to have to all fit together right, that there's no possible way this could have been done. But if you suspend disbelief beyond all that and just get to the crux of the story, is Victor Frankenstein is going to reanimate this cobbled together cadaver using electricity to try to reanimate it, and successfully does. And the being is perceived as a monster, and ultimately is chased by the mob and is killed in a fire. Although the Frankenstein monster itself is actually a relatively benign creature. Any harm he does is through non-malicious means. He doesn't mean to hurt or kill anyone. He is, confused and brought about, even though he has this criminal mind. And in some adaptations of this, he is criminally insane and stuff. And then in others, he's more of a gentle giant that's just misunderstood. And it's a commentary on not judging a book by the cover, and that Victor Frankenstein is really the bad guy in all this. And he's the theme that runs through this, if you go back and you listen to the show, episode 13 I did on the 1950s comic book, the theme is really man should not be trying to play God. Now, in 2016, which is when I'm recording this, that, there are probably more people that don't even believe in God to begin with, and think there's nothing in the realm of God because God doesn't exist in their minds. And they think, it's that perhaps that theme doesn't play as well today in an age of skepticism and agnosticism and atheism, and I understand that, but still, even beyond that, even if you don't accept or don't care about the theme of man playing God, you should care and think and wonder that even through scientific means, we still don't know what that spark is, that spark of animation, that flicker of life, that light, that thing, that soul, for lack of a better term. I mean, that's really what we're talking about, is, this animate soul. But even outside of that, even if you don't believe or don't accept that man has a soul that is contains his consciousness or whatever your particular faith or ideology defines a soul, even if you don't accept that, even if we move into the area of the animal kingdom, there is a clear delineation between alive and dead there too, with animals. If you've ever had a pet pass away, I mean, you see in that moment that, gosh, just 1 second before this pet was alive and now it's not. And there is no way to bring that thing back. Yes, you can restart hearts. Yes, you can get electrical activity going again. You can pump blood. You can put air into the lungs and out. You can, you'll pump blood in, pump blood out. But that spark, you can't fix that once it's gone. And we don't know what that is. We can't even describe it. Doctors can't even put a word on it. Scientists refuse to use the term soul or life, and they say it's a extremely complicated process, that there's not a simple answer to this, that the soul is actually a multitude of functions and things and processes, and it's the cessation of all that in a short span of time that is clinical death. But that's just one idea, and I think there are flaws to that idea. I think it's there is a thing, and perhaps one day we will discover it. Perhaps one day we will be able to say, maybe we can do something about it, maybe we can't, but we will be able to quantify this thing that exists that, for lack of a better term, we're calling a soul, and that is what Victor Frankenstein and his was trying to animate in his monster and did so successfully there. And of course, there have been many knockoffs of Frankenstein over the years. There have been many takes on that, many ideas of it's become really, Frankenstein has become more of an arts type really now than just a specific thing. There have been so many, you know, versions of this, but how many horror movies? I mean, even from like Friday the 13th is essentially a modern day Frankenstein type movie. Even though Jason wasn't cobbled together, he still dies alive. It's still, you know, this plotting monster that is, you know, 1 minute dead, 1 minute alive, and you know, so there's a lot of thematical similarities between those two. Just a brief overview of the novel, and again, I won't spend a lot of time on the novel itself because I was not particularly that well versed in it. I've read it before. I think I've actually read it twice, but it was it just didn't resonate with me so much. So, Frankenstein of the Modern Prometheus is a novel written by English author Mary Shelley that tells the story of a young science student, Victor Frankenstein, who creates a grotesque but sentient creature in an unorthodox scientific experiment. Shelley started writing the story when she was 18, and the first edition of the novel was published anonymously in London in 1818 when she was 20 years old. Shelley's name first appeared on the second edition, published in France in 1823. So there are already some differences here from the novel. Frankenstein was a young scientific student. Of course, in the movies and later adaptations and you think of him as an older, established scientist who's really kind of been blackballed from the scientific world because of his ungodly, unnatural experiments. And I always love those terminologies from this Victorian era stuff. You see this a lot in Dracula and Frankenstein. The early Victorian era stuff is they're unnatural. You know, you're going against the laws of nature, and there was a sinister taboo to that. Mary Shelley traveled through Europe in 1814, journeying along the Rhine in Germany with a stop in Gernsheim, which is just 10 miles away from Frankenstein Castle, where two centuries before an alchemist was engaging in experiments. Later, she traveled in the region of Geneva, Switzerland, where much of the story takes place, and the topic of galvanism and other similar occult ideas were the themes of conversation among her companions, particularly her future husband, Percy Shelley. Mary Percy, Lord Byron, and John Polidori decided to have a competition to see who could write the best horror story. After thinking for days, Shelley dreamt about a scientist who created life and was horrified by what he made. Her dream later evolved in the novel story. I've often wondered, in the retelling of this story, I'd like to read those other horror stories. Like, maybe hers wasn't the best. Like, who arbitrarily judged this? Like, I'm wondering what Lord Byron's story was about, or Percy Shelley's. Like, and maybe they were published later on, and I just, you know, haven't read them or whatever, but I've kind of been curious as to what these others in this little competition they've had with one another. And again, when you get into that Victorian era stuff, you get into things like alchemy and things like that that are really interesting, that you could see where the mind of people was back then, that they were fascinated with chemicals and chemical processes and chemistry and, you know, natural and unnatural, and how God animates creatures and things like that. And it's something that we in 2016, especially in the scientific community, they don't even wrestle with these questions. I mean, it's just not even that. There's, they've moved totally away from these more esoteric type questions. Frankenstein is infused with elements of Gothic novel and romantic movement. At the same time, it's an early example of science fiction. Brian Aldiss has argued that it should be considered the first true science fiction story because, in contrast to previous stories with fantastical elements resembling those of later science fiction, the central character makes a deliberate decision and turns to modern experiments in the laboratory. Now, this achieves the fantastic results of Frankenstein's monster. It had a considerable influence in literature and popular culture and spawned a complete genre of horror stories, films, and plays. Since the novel's publication, the name Frankenstein has often been used to refer to the monster itself, as it is in the stage adaptation. This usage is sometimes considered erroneous, but usage commentators regard it as well-established and acceptable. In the novel, the monster is identified by words such as wretch, creature, monster, demon, and it. Speaking to Victor Frankenstein, the wretch refers to himself as the atom of your labors, and elsewhere as someone who would have been your atom, but instead your fallen angel. And again, in the novel and in some movie adaptation, the Frankenstein monster, the creature, is intelligent. And he is referring, of course, by calling himself Adam, he is referring to the biblical story of Adam and Eve. He is the first of this new created creature, of Victor Frankenstein's Adam, his first man. Frankenstein's rejection of his creature he's created is the fact he doesn't give it a name, which causes a lack of identity. This is one of the themes therein. Instead, being referred to by all the derogatory terms that I just mentioned there. During a telling of Frankenstein, Mary Shelley referred to the creature as Adam. Shelley was referring to the first man, of course, in the Garden of Eden, as we said. This is her epigraph about it. Did I request thee, maker from my clay, to mold me man? Did I solicit thee from darkness to promote me? And that is taken from John Milton's classic Paradise Lost, where Adam is questioning God about, did I ask to be made? And is pondering his own existence and stuff. It's interesting to note that the original early critical reception of the book was actually mostly unfavorable. There was confused speculation as to the identity of the author. As you know, it took two volumes before Mary Shelley's name actually came on there. Sir Walter Scott wrote that, upon the whole, the work impresses us with a high idea of the author's original genius and happy power of expression. But the Quarterly Review described it as a tissue of horrible and disgusting absurdity. So, oftentimes it is... It takes a little while to, I guess, get acclaim. Mary Shelley had contact with some of her most influential minds at the time. Her father, William Godwin, was very progressive and encouraged his daughter to participate in conversations that took place in his home with various scientific minds, many of whom were actively engaged in the study of anatomy. So she had a basis at home for this whole sort of thing. She was familiar with the ideas of using dead bodies for study, the newer theory of using electricity to animate the dead, and the concerns of religion and the general public regarding the morality of tampering with God's work. Despite the reviews, Frankenstein achieved an almost immediate popular success. It became widely known, especially through melodramatic theatrical adaptations. Mary Shelley saw a production of Presumption, or The Fate of Frankenstein, a play by Richard Peake in 1823. French translation appeared as early as 1821. Frankenstein has been both well-received and disregarded since its anonymous publication in 1881. Critical reviews of that time demonstrate these two views. The Bell Assembly described the novel as very bold fiction. Quarterly Review again stated that the author has the power of both conception and language. And The Edinburgh Magazine and Literary Miscellany hope to see more productions from this author. That, you know, it's amazing, that being her first work as well. Despite these initial dismissals, critical reception has been largely positive since the mid-20th century. And, you know, I think it was kind of ahead of its time, really. In his 1981 nonfiction book, Dance Macabre, author Stephen King considers Frankenstein monster, along with Dracula and the werewolf, to be an archetype of numerous horrific creatures. Later, that followed up in literature, film, and television in a role he refers to as the thing without a name. He considers such contemporary creations as the 1951 film The Thing from Another World and The Incredible Hulk as an example of similar monstrosities that have followed his wake. And, of course, Marvel's Incredible Hulk, the Hulk, is, very clearly based on Frankenstein. There are many similarities between the misunderstood creature created out of an accident in the Hulk's case and then the lumbering monster. In fact, originally he was drawn very similar to Frankenstein, gray with a squarish head. He was very similar in appearance, except perhaps larger than Frankenstein. And in Marvel Comics, even had a Frankenstein character they called Adam that was the actual Frankenstein monster reanimated again. As you can imagine, there were tons of television shows and movies over the years. Plays, again, as early as the early 1800s. Even Thomas Edison, the first person to really work with moving pictures and stuff, one of his first early works in 1910, before cinematography was even a thing, before filmmaking was even a thing, you had those old Edison silent films that he experimented with ways to make them. One of the first things he made was Frankenstein. And watching it in silent in the old, the sepia tones and stuff, very creepy. I mean, and you could see like the character itself, which was played by Charles Ogle in 1910. It would be comedic and kind of hilarious if it was in color, but in these old sepia tones with that jerky kind of motion and silentness has a very somber, dark aspect to it just in and of itself. Even before the famous, Boris Karloff Frankenstein that took place in 1931, there had been numerous adaptations of it, even in film. 1915, Life Without a Soul was based on that. The Monster of Frankenstein was a movie made in 1920, 11 years before the Universal Studios Frankenstein monster that was so famous, again, with Boris Karloff, the legendary monster actor in the role of the monster. And then it was Universal sequels to that, of course. 1935, Bride of Frankenstein, which is one of the great monster movies, and really one of the more unsettling and macabre, dark monster movies you'll ever see. If you've never given Bride of Frankenstein the time of day, you really should. You really should go watch it because it is really one of the better ones of those. Son of Frankenstein. Boris Karloff again returning that. Lon Chaney Jr. picked up the role and started appearing in these movies, Ghost of Frankenstein. And then you had a lot of the monster mashups, in the 1940s, Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula. You even had Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein. Lon Chaney was replaced eventually by Glenn Strange in those. Then the Hammer House films of the 1950s through the 1970s, where you had Peter Cushing playing the Dr. Frankenstein. And those movies were really unsettling and kind of weird. And then there were even more. There were, even up into the 1990s, there were they were making Frankenstein movie. 1994, of course, was with Robert De Niro, was a pretty big budget remake of the Frankenstein movies. Even up to today, they're still making Frankenstein plays and movies. In 1915, there was a movie called Victor Frankenstein, an American movie. I, Frankenstein from 2014. And, of course, many, many things have been loosely based on Frankenstein and this whole idea of reanimating life. And as we talked about in episode 13, so many of those, 1950s made a whole comics genre about about those similar things. I mean, so many stories written by by Stan Lee and all the greats of that era of comic writing were based in or around or upon Frankenstein and the Frankenstein monster and bringing dead things back to life and grave robbing. I mean, grave robbing was a huge thing back then as well. So the idea of this tampering with God's work, doing, you know, man interfering in the realm of God, opens up so much more to the imagination of, you know, you get into modern day cloning and stuff like that. Cloning and genetic manipulation is very much the modern day successor to what the mad scientists of the Victorian era were doing. It's very much the same thing. Perhaps 100, 200 years from now, novels will be written about that. That will be the thing they look back on and go, oh, it's, you know, it's horrible. They'll create like a, you know, a pig with a human brain or something. You know, who knows? But I imagine they will look very much back on that. And, you know, we're having the same arguments. Is it, you know, man interfering in the realm of God with cloning and things like that, that they were having those same arguments and conversations back then? Well, I hope you have enjoyed this episode of Dragon King Dark. I've put this episode together kind of on the fly, pre-recorded it. I'm actually going camping this weekend. If you've enjoyed our Aunt Jeannie Johnson shows from our early run, I know those were some of our most popular ones. I still get emails to this day about it. I'm actually going camping in the woods near Aunt Jeannie Johnson's this weekend. In fact, when you're listening to this, I will be in those woods. If you're listening to this weekend, it's posted. My wife and I will actually be camping out in the Sipsey Wilderness area, very near in the same woods where they were hanging the people and shooting the people, and Aunt Jeannie Johnson was dug in. I mean, we are literally the next road to the right past there, off in the wilderness. It's a national forest. There's a protected wilderness area in there. Camped it many times. We're spending the weekend over there. It's really hot this weekend, very dry. In fact, it's like we're going to have to really be conscious about our water and stuff. I'm still not, my health is still not 100%. So I'm hoping this will build some stamina if it don't kill me. And I really enjoy camping and getting out in the wilderness and stuff like that. So we're doing that this weekend. And so hopefully Dragon King Dark episode 23 next week, we'll have some stories about overnight in the deep, dark forest, not a man-made thing in sight in these woods of Civil War battles and death and Aunt Jeannie Johnson and ghost women and, you know, cryptoids and everything else have been storied in this legendary wilderness area, and we'll be camping right smack in the middle of it. No fear here, son. We're doing it. Hope you've enjoyed this show. I am Carl Stern. Thanks a lot for listening, and I will be back soon with another show.
How did you happen to get in here?
I ran here. You scared the daylights out of me last night.
Seems like the truth shouldn't scare anybody, man or boy.
What's the matter, Lieutenant? Is this thing getting you?
Oh, no, I'm just thinking about public reaction to all this.